generosity and to justice. We've been looking at this explosive sermon of Jesus over the last number of weeks called the Beatitude, this list of blessings that sound anything like a blessing. You know, blessed are the persecuted, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are those who are poor in spirit. Doesn't sound much like blessing, does it? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they will be filled. And it's so interesting in this particular blessing that Jesus uses words, verbs that are so essential to life itself. Hunger and thirst, food and water. We cannot live without them. That's what he used to describe, to represent this pursuit of justice. And we all know a degree of hunger and thirst, don't we? Probably not the kind that leads to starvation. But Jesus' audience knew that. They didn't know if they'd have food for the next day. There was no stockpile in the freezer if fishing was bad that day or if the crop failed. And Jesus chose these desperate sensations of the body, the needs that are essential to life, to represent this desire, this pursuit of justice. And as our stomachs ache for lack of food and our mouths are parched from lack of water, that is how those who are desperate for justice feel. It's that kind of an ache. It's inner, it's visceral, it's palpable, it's desperate. Jesus says, you who are torn up inside by injustice, either for yourself or on behalf of others, you will be filled. It's a promise. And every year here at Lakeside, we host a generosity campaign. Less under the tree, more for the world. And in the years past, we've supported Wyndham House, Victim Services, Hope House. We hosted a refugee family. And it always feels like an audacious endeavor come the very beginning of December, doesn't it? Like, wow, I don't know if we can do this. We've only got 4 weeks. And yet every year, I am blown away by your generosity. And this year, we felt compelled to support anti-trafficking efforts. And so we've adopted two organizations, one global, one local. And we are going to be abolitionists to end slavery. Like, who thought that in 2024 we'd be talking about being abolitionists? And yet that's where we find ourselves. Have you ever considered yourself or thought that you would ever be an abolitionist? Well, this year we are. And we're going to partner in that. Globally, we're partnering with International Justice Mission, or IJM for short. And it's an organization that seeks not just to rescue those trapped in slavery, but also to campaign against it, to lobby governments, to equip local and national government agencies for the prevention of trafficking, and to reduce trafficking globally. And that seems like an audacious endeavor, doesn't it? An audacious vision. And then locally, we want to partner with an organization called SEEDS, and it is a home for rescued women and girls right here on our doorstep, if you can believe it, to help them to get their lives back, to experience wholeness and healing, and to start over again, to claim back what has been stolen. And I'm excited to have the directors of those two organizations with us here today so that you can hear firsthand from the front lines and not just from me. And so I'm going to invite Joash to come up. We know Joash. He's a Lakesider. And later I'll invite Vicky Olatunden from SEEDS. And each are going to share briefly about their organization and what they are doing and the impact. And then we're going to have a bit of a panel discussion afterwards. So let's welcome Joash.
Well, good morning, church. If we haven't met, my name is Joash Thomas, and many of you know me as a Lakesider, but I'm also an IJMer. I've had the joy of working for International Justice Mission, or IJM, all over the world for the past 10 years now. In fact, here's a picture of my very first speaking engagement for IJM. I was an intern in India. And also, apparently, this is the time of my last haircut. A lot about me has changed since then, a lot. But my passion for this organization and the work that we do has only grown, especially as I've gone from being an intern in the field to a leader in our Canadian office today. IJM is the world's largest global anti-trafficking organization. We believe in equipping local leaders to find local solutions to the problem of violence in their communities. In fact, for the past 26 years, IJM teams have partnered with local authorities and grassroots organizations to strengthen justice systems to bring relief to hundreds of thousands of people from trafficking and violence all over the world. And not only that, through nationally led teams, we've helped protect over 10 million people from ever being subject to violence or trafficking. And we do this, And we do this work of peacemaking because of our Christian faith. In fact, one of the worst injustices happening right now is happening in this beautiful country that I got to visit last year, the Philippines. You know, before the internet, criminals, for the most part, had to physically walk into a bar or a brothel to sexually abuse little children. But today, because of the internet, abusers located anywhere in Ontario can abuse little children online without even leaving their homes. Here's how this works. Someone here in Canada can find a trafficker online in the Philippines and can pay as little as $50 an hour to direct the live-streamed abuse of little children there. Now, these perpetrators are shielded by the virtual nature of the internet, but let me assure you, as someone who's met many of these children firsthand after they've been rescued, as someone who's heard their stories firsthand, there's absolutely nothing that's virtual about this crime. Because little boys and little girls, like our boys and our girls, are forced in front of a camera, and they're abused in ways that I'm not even going to begin to describe in church this morning. In fact, according to a recent study, we now know that 500,000 children in the Philippines, that's 1 in 100 Filipino children, are abused in this way online right now. And you know what's even more depressing as a Canadian? It's the fact that Canada is the number 4 country in the world that's purchasing the demand for this crime. This isn't just a global problem. It's a Canadian problem, fueled by Canadian perpetrators. In fact, over the past 10 years, my colleagues at IJM Philippines have helped local authorities rescue hundreds of little children from this type of trafficking. These are children of all ages. In fact, I got to meet some of these children as little as 5 years old. But just so you know, the youngest child our teams have ever helped rescue was 2 months old. In fact, one of the girls we helped rescue was Ruby. And I actually got to speak at a church in Vancouver last year with Ruby. But Ruby tells us of a time when she went to bed one night screaming, "God, if you're real, God, if you're real, get me out of here." You see, what Ruby did not know at that time was that at the very moment, at the very same moment that Ruby was crying out to God, there was a team of IJM lawyers and IJM social workers working hard with Filipino law enforcement to find Ruby. And this local team was backed by Canadian churches all over this country, generously funding Ruby's rescue operation. And do you know what? The very next morning, IJM staff showed up with local police, and we helped rescue Ruby with 5 other children. Yeah, praise God. I want you to picture this. Imagine being an observer in a courtroom. And imagine watching a perpetrator walking into this courtroom. And I want you to picture the expression on this perpetrator's face as he walks in, smugly, confidently, without any fear of the law. Because you see, for centuries, bad guys like this have been allowed to get away in this court system without any accountability. But now I want you to imagine this. Picture the face of this perpetrator as he takes a look around the room. Here's what he sees. He sees an IJM-trained judge. He sees an IJM-trained prosecutor. He sees IJM-trained OPP officers, and my team was training OPP officers at the OPP conference last week. He sees IJM-trained social workers sitting beside the child, telling her, "You are not alone." Now imagine the expression on the face of that perpetrator as his smugness turns into fear. Because for the very first time in the history of that courtroom, he's terrified. He's terrified of the consequences of trafficking a little child. And guess what? He should be terrified. Because God's preferential option for people in oppression has finally descended upon that court system. And here's what gives me hope. It's this. It's the fact that this isn't just a fictional story. You see, we've actually secured justice in 200 court cases in the Philippines, just like this, up until now. And through our work of empowering local leaders with resources from everyday people here in the Canadian church, we have actually seen child sex trafficking reduce in some parts of the world by as much as 86%. 86%. Things are changing. The Spirit of God is moving. But it's going to take all of us to get the job done. So let me close with this story. A year ago, I got to take some Canadian pastors, including two pastors from Guelph, actually, to meet with the Canadian Embassy in the Philippines. We were meeting with Global Affairs Canada and an RCMP officer whose full job is to partner with IJM and Filipino law enforcement and doing intelligence sharing of Canadian perpetrators abusing Filipino children. The RCMP officer went on to describe a recent case of a 4-year-old Filipino child who was abused by a Canadian perpetrator from the Peel region in Ontario. I mean, the Peel region. My office is in the Peel region, right? This felt very personal. But then this RCMP officer went on to describe the hope. He went on to describe how this 4-year-old Filipino child was rescued because IJM intervened with Philippines law enforcement. And then he went on to describe how this child was restored at a Filipino aftercare shelter that was funded by IJM. Well, it turned out that this aftercare shelter that this Filipino child was restored in was funded by the church communities of the two Guelph pastors in that meeting. Think about that. A Canadian perpetrator who abused that child online, but also two Guelph church communities that rose to the occasion and funded the restoration of this child by funding a rescue operation with IJM. Yes, the darkness of injustice is real, but there's always hope. There's always hope because the church is God's plan for the restoration of all things. And when you partner with us over the next few weeks through your generosity, you are proclaiming to an unjust world a vision of a world that God promises to us, a world where every woman and child is protected, where every tear is wiped away, where God's justice will be fully restored here on earth as it is in heaven. Here's a video that shows you an example of a rescue operation that you will fund through Lakeside Church over the next few weeks. Watch this. Thank you.
I'd love to now introduce you to Vicky Olatunden. She is the Executive Director of SEEDS. And I'm just going to turn it over to her now. She's going to blow our minds.
Good morning, Lakeside.
Good morning.
What a pleasure to be here today. I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would have the word abolitionist as well as executive director on my business card. I'd always been taught it had to do with the transatlantic slave trade, but I found myself in a different kind of slave trade today, the trade of humans. I work for an organization called SEEDS, which stands for Supporting Every Eve's Daughter Safely. I never thought in my wildest dreams, as an attorney, this would be the position I'd be in this time. I'm not just an attorney, a former attorney now, an advocate, but I'm also a mum. And it cuts really deep in my world, both professionally and personally, when I begin to see the madness that is going on out there. I want to thank Joash for the information because it's absolutely accurate. Only my story is very local in our community. Next slide, please. Let's talk numbers, because the numbers don't lie. I've listened to statistics and numbers over the last year. I've been with SEEDS for the last 18 months. I've been an attorney for a very long time. I got called to bar like several decades ago. But one of the reasons why I don't practice law anymore is because I felt the courtroom was too small. And like Joash said, a perpetrator can walk into a court knowing that in Canada, only 1% of cases ever get prosecuted, and the success rate is even lower. So that smug smile is literally on his face in Canada. We're about to wipe that smile right the way off. Next slide, please. The average age of entry in sex trafficking in our nation, Canada, the land of the true and the free, the true north, is age 13. And by the way, at 13 years old, I mean, I'm not being 13? 13 years old is the average age of entry into this industry in our country. What that means is that they're entering into this industry daily while mom and dad are downstairs watching a game show. While grandma and grandpa's knitting downstairs and knitting, you know, in a friend's company, they're entering industry because, you know, they have phones. Who would have thought that someone could come into your house, bypass the front door, not climb into the windows, but be in your home? And a young one can be abused just because they have a phone. Next slide, please. The lifespan of someone who gets involved in the sex trafficking industry is 7 to 8 years. If the age of entry is 13, she will not get that birthday cake. She won't get there. If it isn't addiction, drug addiction, if it isn't mental health concerns, if it isn't suicide, it's homicide. There are three kinds of pimps: the gorilla pimp, the CEO pimp, and the Romeo pimp. And by the way, the Romeo pimp is the one that would groom at school, in high school. They're recruiters in high school and middle school even now. Next slide, please. A 13-year-old will earn her trafficker $280,000 in the first year. And if that child is any younger, they'll earn more. You see, with a drug, you sell a drug, you use a drug once. A human, you can sell a human being over and over and over and over, and when they're done, you delete. Either by suicide or by homicide. Next slide, please. 27% of the children involved in sex trafficking in our country are children. They're very young children. And as Joash was saying, 4 years old, 5 years old, 2 years old, 2 months old. Not in Canada, right? Wrong. Yes, in our Canada, right here in Ontario, and we are the second highest number for sex trafficking in our country. We only exceed Nova Scotia slightly. The thing about it is how people enter, and from what we've discovered, is over 2.5 4 million Canadians right now have said they've been hurt sexually as children. It starts there in the home. And traffickers, they just key on that. Next slide, please. 93% of the trafficked victims in our country do not come from overseas. No, they don't. I know we've been told, you know, it's the Philippines, Moldova. They're Canadian-born children. 93% of those involved in Canada are Canadian-born children. Someone help me. Someone help me. Next slide, please. This for me is the hardest because I drive along the 401 every day. And every day, over 250 girls are sold. They're bought and sold along our highways. How can this be happening to us? How? The beautiful thing about it is this. It has happened, but we can bring justice. Today is the day for justice. We can stop what is happening now because we can. God's ability to put his love in our hearts and for us to stand up and act. We're no longer going to sit down and just listen. We're going to act and we're going to put a stop to it because we can. And that's where we show the love of Christ. Next slide, please. I will teach you one thing today that may help. Can everyone put either hand up, left or right? Thank you. If you see this sign anywhere, please know this young lady's calling for help. Please put your thumb in, tuck your thumb in for me. And then hide him. That's saying, help me, someone, I'm trapped. Somebody help me, I'm trapped. You might see it like this. In a supermarket, see it like this in a car, see it like this in the back of a vehicle. That child, that woman is saying, whoever you are, call 911, help me. It's time that we act, and we need to do it now. Next slide, please. So, you reassure those who are involved, because sometimes someone will tell you something or say something. Let them know that they are safe in your hands, and you will do something to help. That's a hotline number for the National Center for Trafficked Children, 1-888-900-1010. And resolve. Let's resolve together as a community. Not here, not now, not ever. Because we as a community are going to stand up, we're going to rise up, and we're going to put a stop to what is going on in our country and in our nation. Number 4 in the world is going to become 0. If we stand up together as a community. And can I say this from the bottom of my heart? Thank you. Thank you. Can I just finally say before I stop, the final slide, please. You can reach us that way if you've got a phone. But can I put the slide just before that one up? Thank you. That's why we do what we do. Because she's our daughter. Yeah. She belongs to us. Thank you. Thank you.
We have a couple of minutes, and I just have a couple of questions that were on my heart and possibly on your heart, and I just want to ask Vicky and Joash a couple of questions before we wrap up this morning. Thank you both. Did I not say they were going to blow our minds? Not in a great way. There's a lot of work to be done. But thank you for educating us, for opening my eyes to just how prevalent and immediate the problem is. Vicky, you said Seeds is a shelter. It's a home. Can you just describe to us maybe how it's different than other shelters that we might be aware of?
Yes, it's actually a home for survivors of sex trafficking. It's not an institution. So it's like a family home, where the young girls have come, where the women come, and they enter into a family. Unlike having a number, having a name, it's basically them, and we've created a beautiful home, 100 acres of land in the country, and they've just come to appreciate what it is to just be at home, in their beds, at night, safe.
Thank you. Joash, last year, this year, sometime in the last 12 months, a movie came out, The Sound of Freedom. Maybe some of you have seen it. How is that the same or different to how IJM operates your rescues?
Great question. And I asked Robin to ask me this question because I know that most of you are probably thinking of that when you hear of things like this. I'll say this, like, so we're really thankful for the awareness that's been generated from that movie. I think we come across so many people who are now paying attention to the issue because they watched that movie. But that being said, our way of working is very different from what you see in that movie. In our experience, it's going to take a lot more than what's shown in the movie to get the job done, to see the kind of results we see, an 86% reduction in child sex trafficking. And the key difference is this. For us, we don't send in Navy SEALs to kick down doors. That's not our way of doing things. We train local law enforcement to do their jobs, the jobs that God put them on earth to do, as we see in Romans 13. And they are then trained and equipped with resources to go and do their jobs. And that then, once you get their buy-in, that then reduces the crime sustainably over a long period of time. So that's how it's different.
Thank you. When we spoke on Wednesday, so I had this Zoom call lined up with Vicky and Joash on Wednesday, and all of a sudden Vicky had to go and pick up a new resident. So there she was in the car on the Zoom call. You weren't driving though, right? Somebody else was driving.
I was a passenger.
Yeah, I was a passenger. So it's all good. It was safe. How do you hear about residents? How do you hear about about someone who needs to be rescued? How does it get to you?
Law enforcement, victim services can. Local churches can, individuals can refer, and the girls themselves can self-refer.
Okay.
And we will take anyone from anywhere. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. Our business offices are in Cambridge, but we've taken girls from all over Ontario, all over the country. Doesn't matter.
And how about you, Joash? Yours would be slightly different, but how do you hear of those who need rescuing?
Yeah, quite the same, but I would say increasingly it's law enforcement coming to us because they trust us, mm-hmm. And they know that we'll be able to provide them with the resources that they don't have to go and rescue these kids. So increasingly law enforcement, and that's a win for us because we want them to be doing the job long term.
And what happens to those who are rescued through IJM? So imagine they go through some kind of a recovery, and then at the end of that, some of them have been sold by their own families, so yeah. I'm assuming they're not sent back?
Yeah. I mean, the numbers in the Philippines are quite stark. 80% of the time, it's a family member that's actually sold them into this, 80% of the time. So what we do is we put them in a safe aftercare facility and community. We have peer leaders that emerge among them, and we stay with a child until they're fully restored. No matter how long it takes. So that's what we do, and we work with the local church and making sure that these children are restored, because the church has always been good at the compassion and the restorative side, so we leverage that at the same time.
Okay. And Vicky, what about the timeline for the girls in the homes to get them from beginning to independence? I'm sure it changes from girl to girl, but is there a program or a sort of a recovery format?
Yes, well, our program is a 12-month program. A lot of programs out there, like a couple weeks, couple months, that is, it's very difficult to restore somebody in a couple weeks. So we basically have a program where the young ladies are with us for a full year. And so they go from the beginning of the program where they decompress to the first stage, second stage, fourth stage. And the idea is to get them so they're fully restored and they're able to reintegrate into community and able to find work and able to live in the community with a home.
Okay. Joash, I'm interested how the Canadian government factors into the work you do. Like, is there any involvement there? Or?
Yeah, great question. So it really started with that meeting I talked about at the Canadian Embassy in the Philippines with the Guelph pastors. And the RCMP guy in that meeting, he told us that, in his opinion, the Filipino government actually does a better job in prosecuting criminals than the Canadian government does. So, for example, in the Philippines, in terms of accountability, it's 10 to 15 years of jail time if you engage in this crime. In the Canadian court, the RCMP guy was telling me if they get a two-year sentence, they're throwing a party at the RCMP office because most of the time it's 3 to 6 months of house arrest and with the laptops taken for a little bit and then it's given back to them. So that does nothing. We need things to change. We need criminals to be held accountable so that they know that this is unacceptable. This is not okay.
So part of your organization's job is to lobby the government to make them aware?
100%. Okay. So we are now working in Ottawa with members of parliament. We have meetings regularly with the opposition leader's office, the prime minister's office, justice minister's office, everyone to change these laws, to strengthen it. It'll take a while to get the job done, but we're committed to the long haul of this. Our job is to just show up as long as it takes, as much as it takes to get the job done.
Vicky, you mentioned to me that these girls aren't going home for Christmas.
No.
What can we do to help them have a lovely Christmas? I'm sure you all are making the home festive and doing all you can, but how can we partner with you in just helping them to have a real home Christmas?
Just so that you know, Christmas is a very vulnerable time for those who have been trafficked. And the numbers for trafficking in this season, because there's holidays, shoots through the roof. The demand is high. So what we've done is we've created, as you say, a very festive home. But what the girls need is your support. First of all, they need your prayers. They need your love. And you can show that by way of physical gifts, you know, jammies, bed sheets, things like that. Gift cards as well, cash donations. In fact, there is nothing that you cannot give that we cannot use at the house. So what you can do more than anything else is donate by way of cash, by way of gift cards, by way of physical things, things like shampoo, non-perishable foods, things like that will help bring the costs down. It takes approximately $35,000 a month to run the home. Okay. With a 24/7 staff, 24 hours, 7 days a week staff is literally, that's it, it's bare minimum. So whatever you can do to mitigate that cost is fine.
Awesome, thank you. And then lastly, I just want to ask you each just a personal question. How do you stay motivated? It must feel futile at times when we look at those numbers. It's encouraging on the one hand, but I'm sure it must be discouraging at times. So how do you personally stay motivated, Joash?
Yeah, I would say our partners, our church partners, give me so much joy. With your generosity. And this is doable. Like, I've seen the numbers, they're doable. So, for example, in the one city in the Philippines where we saw an 86% drop in child sex trafficking, that took 500 rescue operations and 100 arrests. And your church is funding one of these rescue operations this Christmas, right? Like, so this is doable. And it's all about doing whatever we can with whatever we have. So that gives me great joy. And then on top of that, we also have spiritual disciplines for our staff. So as part of our employee handbook, you have to take 30 minutes of personal stillness time and 30 minutes of corporate prayer every single day. So I'm literally paid at work to show up and pray for an hour because you need that to do this work long term, otherwise you're going to burn out.
Vicky, how about you?
Pretty much the same, to be honest, but I'll say this, because of the generosity of church, when I leave today, two of the girls in the house are actually going to be baptized this evening. What keeps me going? I have a 17 and a half year old daughter. Every one of those women, every one of those girls is my Michaela. I'll say this, years and years ago, do you know why I said it was doable? It's very doable. Years ago, no one thought the transatlantic slave trade would ever end. And it felt like everything that people did, it was kind of, drop in the bucket, drop in the bucket. Well, eventually, that bucket became full. And now we don't have that anymore, not as much as we did. And the thing is this, it gives me hope that I know that if we continue to do this in the strength of God, we'll be able to have maximum maximum impact. One of the young ladies, I'll tell you, had been trafficked for over 15 years. And we had very disappointing court results last week. The perpetrator got off, not guilty, on all charges. It's time for that in our community to change.
Thank you. Thank you both for sharing with us today. Can we just thank them? So that kind of leaves the question, how do we get involved? And we're going to do it just a little bit differently this year. Rather than a four-week Christmas campaign, which is usually what we do, we're going to extend this from Christmas to Easter. We're calling it Advent to Lent. And we're going to celebrate at Easter on Resurrection Day what God has been doing in our midst over the next 4 months. As we hunger and as we thirst for justice, for these girls, for these women, for these children. And here's why we're extending it. To fully fund an IJM rescue, it costs between $10,000 and $12,000. That's a significant sum of money to raise in 4 weeks. That's from beginning right through to recovery. As you heard Joash say, they just don't, you know, kind of get them through some counseling and then they're on their own. They see them through until they can stand on their own. And so this involves law enforcement and lawyers and social workers and counselors. And so we might need more than 4 weeks to raise that kind of money. But imagine if Lakeside could fund a rescue. Imagine that. Imagine if less under the tree meant that children are set free. Wow, that just doesn't feel like too much of a sacrifice to me. And so we want to support IJM through our monetary giving. We want to support, supply, and stock the Seeds Home. And as they onboard more residents, you're about halfway through full at this point. You have a few extra bits. Okay. We've published a list on our Christmas page with non-perishable needs, anything from toothpaste to tea and everything in between. So you just look around your home on a day, from the time you wake up to the time you go to sleep. What are the things you use? What are the things you need? What are the things that need replenishing? What do you need to function daily? They need the same things. So in the atrium, you passed a large manger and a Christmas tree. Over the next 4 weeks, that's where we are going to be bringing our sheets and towels and jammies and toothpaste and whatever, and we're going to put it there in the manger and around. And over the next 4 months, we're going to collect. That will give us lots of time, the supplies that they're going to need to carry them through. Vicky mentioned that they're not going home for Christmas. We can make Christmas special for them. Stocking stuffers, the things that you get for your own children or your own friends, could make Christmas really, really special for them. We're also extending it because we're aware of the cost of living. We're not oblivious to the fact that prices are going up and salaries are not. And so this gives us some breathing room and an opportunity for creativity. And I know there are creative minds out there. So over the next 4 months, we are going to engage our imaginations in fundraising and put fun into fundraising. Maybe we can host gatherings that double as fundraisers. So some of the things we've done in the past in your homes or wherever, we can leverage those as fundraisers. You can just Google crazy fundraisers, and it's amazing what you're going to find. There's some great ones there. There's some not so great ones there. There's some ones that you do at your own risk. But we can do this as families, as small groups, as classrooms, as office departments. We can do it as neighborhoods. We can get the artisans among us, the artists, the musicians. Just let your imagination go wild and think of the ways that we can fundraise between now and Easter. It's also a great way to build connection, to build relationships, and to make friends. In fact, there is a fundraiser starting today, and it is called Dresember. It's a little bit like Movember, you have to wear a mustache every day. Well, December, you have to wear a dress every day for the month of December. Maybe not on Saturdays, though. Like, could I take Saturday off? Unless a bathrobe counts as a dress. Saturdays and Christmas Day.
I think this counts as a dress, that too.
Okay, there you go. That counts as a dress. So I am going to endeavor to wear a dress every single day for the month of December. And we have a Lakeside team, and I believe we have a slide. Yeah, you can just click on that. And you can either sign up to lead your own team and be sponsored, or if you don't want to wear a dress every day and freeze your to death every day, you can support someone who is. You can also wear a tie. So dress or tie for the month of December, but Saturday's off and Christmas Day. We can do this. Lakeside, I believe that we can do this together, online, in the room, together we can do this. So thank you, Joash. Thank you, Vicky, for sharing the passion of your heart, sharing the need, educating us, enlightening us. They're going to both be in the atrium. Vicky has some tables set up with some information. If you have further questions that we haven't dealt with today, they would be happy to chat with you about that. And you have something on the table that you just want to tell us a little bit about.
I do. The young ladies at the home are so very grateful. And they did ask me, Vicky, is there anything that we can do to say thank you? And I said, well, how about some ornaments? So they've taken the time to make some Christmas ornaments for you in exchange for a donation. And they want you to remember them. They want you to put a little ornament on your tree and remember them at Christmas time. Thank you so much.
So because we haven't brought our things today and we're just launching today, maybe we could hang those little ornaments on the tree by the manger. And as you bring in whatever it is that you bring in over the next few weeks, you can bring that in and take an ornament. Just a couple things before we go. Next Saturday is Gingerbread House Day here in the cafe. If you haven't registered or reserved your gingerbread house, you need to do that today. It's the last day, and so you'll want to click on the link or go to our website and do that. And next Sunday, it wouldn't be Christmas if we didn't have Ugly Sweater Day. So this is a challenge to you. Maybe you can make it a fundraiser. Maybe you can have someone support you or sponsor you to wear the ugliest Christmas sweater you can find. And we'll all show up in our crazy ugly Christmas sweaters next Sunday. There's lots of other Christmas events. As I said, they're on our Christmas page on the website. And so we are looking forward to a month together just celebrating Christmas and praying and thinking through how we can collectively as Lakeside do our little part to end this scourge on humanity. Jesus said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they will be filled. So may we be those who hunger and thirst for justice and who are not satisfied until all are set free. Can I just bless us as we go today? Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. And thank you for what you're going to be doing in the weeks and months ahead. The Apostle Paul, one of the writers of Scripture, said this: may the God of hope fill you with all hope and joy and peace as you trust in Him.